I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. The assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, is behind the glass. And it is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So the Texans general manager, Nick Caserio, he's done the interview circuit here these last few days, the parade that's going on after they've absolutely smashed the 2023 NFL draft. He did the Texans All Access thing with Vandermeer and John Harris earlier this week. I caught up on that. I listened to him over on the Highway to Hell with PP earlier this morning. And I've never once thought this until today, to be completely honest with you, Blankers. I believe that Nick Caserio made the trade that he did on Thursday because he's trying to cover his butt. He's trying to save his job. I didn't feel that way. Like, I've told y'all, I think that he pressed the reset button whenever D'Amico Ryans got hired, that he still has a long leash, that the seat's not warm with Nick Caserio. Like, I firmly believed all of that until I heard Nick Caserio today answer the question about giving up the 2024 Houston Texan first-round pick. He basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, he basically, like, to me it sounded very reckless. He's like, well, we're not worried about 24. All we're worried about is 2023 and winning football games. We'll worry about 2024 whenever we get there. And to be so cavalier, and I consider it reckless, with what probability is telling us is going to be a pretty high pick. Yesterday we went through the win-loss record. We think it could, like, very likely could be a top five pick. Las Vegas, who are the best predictors of win-loss totals, are telling you it's going to be a top three pick. I think if you took the pulse of the city and you got like the average pulse of the city, even like the fans, and then maybe not the fair, like the not the non-homers, I think even they would have the Houston Texans going like 7-10, which puts them in top 10 range. Hearing Nick Caserio dismiss the Houston Texans' possibility of having a top 3, top 5, top 10 pick next year, and to be so cavalier and reckless as to say, like, oh, we're only going to worry about that whenever we get to 2024. Our focus is 2023. That screams to me, Blankers, of him saying, I'm not even sure I'm making that pick in 2024. I have not thought that Nick Caserio was trying to save his job last Thursday night until I heard him say that today.
And I actually had those thoughts when the stories came out, and I think we discussed it briefly, but when the stories came out about, and I think it was Albert Breer again, when we heard that Cal was not only going to be a voice in the room, which we were concerned about, but that he was kind of strengthening his position, that they needed a quarterback. And we've seen this with Joe's Bears with Ryan Pace when, you know, they went in full panic mode and they decided that, you know, I'm going to give up so many assets because I probably won't be here to see who they would be anyway to save my rear end, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. But in this case, you know, whether they admit it or not or anybody saw it or not, but other than those of us that hear him speak a lot, Nick Caserio got his hand slapped last year after Lovie was fired by somebody. It was a kinder, softer, gentler Nick Caserio. And I don't think anybody other than Cal and Hannah were capable of doing that and getting through to him and getting him to take notice of it.
Yeah.
Then when you heard what he had to say about the hiring of a coach, and, you know, if he had to step aside, he wouldn't. Not that I believed that, but I believed it was still more of a kinder, gentler. But then when you see what they did in the draft, and you said, well, you got a new quarter, I mean, a new coach, and he's a defensive-minded coach, and you know he's going to be here for the long haul. And if he really wants a defensive player, or especially a kid that played at his school that, you know, he really feels strongly about, but the owner is desperate for quarterback, for what it means for the franchise and the city and the reputation and everything else, and he knows that he's stuck in the middle, he appeased both sides to try and make sure he still had that place smack dab in the middle of both of them and had a job. And I think it's fully possible. I think it's plausible. And I think it's probable in terms of part of what he was thinking when he made these moves.
I've never heard somebody be so cavalier about a future pick. Like a general manager. Like head coaches, I get. Like they're in the trenches. Players, they don't really care. They're in the trenches. But a general manager's job is to build the organization. It's to make like long-term moves. I mean, when you're in win-now mood, you're making the short-term moves, trying to win football games. But you always have like an eye on the future. I've never heard a GM be like, oh, yeah, we really don't care where that pick's at. Especially when it could be potentially a top three pick to Vegas, top five pick to us, top 10 pick to the rest of the city.
Even when you're a general manager that pretty much knows the writing's on the wall, he's probably going to lose his job. And I go back to Pace again in Chicago, where he still addressed like what picks he gave up. He still addressed it and tried to spin it as if, you know, we gave up what we thought was the value for the quarterback that we were getting and something we felt like we had to do. But it was addressed in a way in which you know what the value was you gave up to. You got to give to get. Everybody says whatever else they want to do to try and spin it. But they know that there's a significant value. It's been amazing to me so far since this trade went down how many people are so flippid and basically dismissive, saying, you don't know what that pick's going to be. I mean, I saw that they came out early predictions for next year and said it looks like the Cardinals with the Texans pick and their own pick are going to have two of the top three picks in the draft, if not one and two, two and three.
Right.
And then you see all these people come right behind it going, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. It never turns out that way. Everybody wants to dismiss it because they don't want to admit the true fact, which is this could be a massive haul you gave away.
I don't think they want to believe it.
That's true.
Want to believe it. I partially think Nick Caserio doesn't want to believe it, and or Nick Caserio got marching orders of like, we better win football games immediately or you're on the chopping block. We know that whenever head coaches come in, a lot of times they also bring in their general manager. There was rumors that Nick Caserio could potentially be, you know, no longer the Houston Texans general manager at the conclusion of the draft. Remember those rumors that Nick Caserio dispelled? Because this type of trade, look, you traded for a young player, so it's not like a, you know, we're trading for a veteran, we're going all in on 2023. Like, you're still building a young nucleus with the Houston Texans. Most of the better players on this team are still young, and you're building around young players. So they're trying to build a sustained winner. But for a general manager to be so cavalier talking about the pick that they gave up next year, when it could potentially be a top three, top five, top 10 pick, based on what experts you believe, and I know a lot of you don't want to believe where the Houston Texans pick could potentially end up next year, it terrified me. It showed me a general manager that cares more about the immediate right now today than the overall long-term of this organization, and it came as a surprise to me for a general manager that's always, like, he's always kind of had an eye towards the future. He doesn't like to use the word rebuild, but let's be honest, let's look through actions. Like, the Texans were trying to build a rebuild, a long-term winner. They were building through the draft, et cetera, et cetera. And for him to be like, oh, yeah, we'll worry about 2024 whenever it gets here. We don't have time to worry about where that pick could be. Tells me that a general manager was worried about his job, and he was told that they need to win football games. And I've always kind of been on the side of, I don't think that he's gotten pressure to win football games immediately.
No.
You've been, I think, a little bit more on, like, I think that the ownership's ready to win. And I think we're starting to see some of the actions playing out where perhaps he was told, we better start winning football games. You hear other people talk in this city, like, the Houston Texans are ready to win. So, like, that thought is out there. That thought is already a belief that the Houston Texans need to start winning football games for a variety of reasons. A lot of it's from the fan interest perspective. A lot of it's from the business perspective. I didn't think that it was as immediate as some people thought. I think today that I've been proven wrong. Nick Caserio to me sounded like a guy who made that trade because he's feeling the pressure. He's feeling his seat get warmer and warmer.
It's why he never should have been here. He never should have made these picks. Like, it's since I've joined the show, like, it was like it's been my stance that, like, they should have fired Nick Caserio when they fired Lovie Smith, because even though he had a bad rap, like he had a bad hand dealt to him, like he had the worst cap space in the league, he didn't have a lot of draft capital, You knew the hot seat was coming. And there's if there's any chance that his seat is not ice cold, he should not be given the keys to your future. Because I think I would feel differently about this if it was a new GM. Like, if the 49ers guy made this deal, well, he has a vision, he has a plan, and he's on a six-year deal.
He's also got a roster.
And like, but Caserio, he's got, like, a one-year deal. So it's just like, what's the point? Like, why did they just let Caserio do this if they're not going to give him the next 4 or 5 years? It's just, it's backwards.
So, and here's the other thing, Jeremy.
I think it's an organization that's backwards.
From the standpoint of the organization, no matter how much Nick got coaching, no matter how much we could tell right off the jump, hey, they're force-feeding us Cal. We're also, noticing and recognizing Hannah's more involved. We're seeing them being focused on fan issues to try and rejuvenate the fan base. But no matter who's giving them the advice, no matter what they're talking about internally, you know the one thing that it doesn't take a literal rocket scientist to figure out for any sports organization that gets people back? It's winning. And so when you hear about winning, you know that fans are going to be there, tickets are going to be sold again, merchandise is going to go out the door, people are going to be drinking blue Kool-Aid again.
Yeah.
Well, you can try all these different campaigns and approaches and how you're going to handle press conferences, but if you win, people come back. So maybe they started to feel a little bit more desperate to win than they have in the last couple of years when they were digging out of the Bill O'Brien hole and Nick Caserio was trying to get his feet wet.
I think it's obvious that that's the case. I think it's obvious that they all feel pressure to win, whether it's ownership trying to win football games, because like you said, it's the best marketing tool that exists in sports, because you're winning football games, you're getting people in the building, you're getting people excited, they're buying your uniforms, they're buying your merchandise, everything is good for business. So I do think that the McNairs have pressure to win, and I think that we've seen it twice. One, we saw it with firing Lovie Smith and hiring DeMeco Ryans, which we all love. That was a great move. Like, the Houston Texans upgraded the coaching staff tremendously. There's no denying that. There's no arguing that. That's why I thought it was silly a year ago when people were celebrating the press conference of Lovie Smith. I thought that was ridiculous. The Houston Texans have upgraded tremendously there, but that's a sign that Cal McNair, Hannah McNair, are ready to win football games. And I think that we're seeing the sign here in this draft where the Houston Texans getting aggressive, making a brave move, doing something that not many teams have done in NFL history, trading a quarterback package for a non-quarterback up in the draft because they are desperate to win immediately for Cal and Anna ownership. They want the money. They want the financial gain. And I think the general manager, Nick Caserio, does not want to lose his job.
No, I think that's absolutely accurate. Because you know what? No matter what, if he has a six-year deal or not, and he's going to get paid no matter what, no one wants to lose their job. No one wants to have the egg on their face of saying, hey, the first time I got a gig, I didn't even get to the halfway point and I lost it. And how that might affect future employment and other opportunities and the belief in at football people that he was capable of doing the job. They don't want to get fired. And they know that they made missteps. We know how many times general managers, as much as everybody can see it and evaluate it over and over again, they screwed up and they drafted the wrong player or they took a player that couldn't play. They're going to make sure they don't trade or cut that player and give them every opportunity to succeed because their egos won't let them admit they made a mistake. Here, I don't think he had much choice. I think an owner who normally sits on his hands when he's not playing video games and doesn't say anything and let the last guy, when he had the general manager title, run amok and trade away and do whatever he wanted to do, suddenly decided enough was enough, and when he speaks, Nick obviously listened, I think.
713-780-ESPN. Do you get that same sense? 713-780-3776. Texans' desperation to win. And look, maybe this isn't a bad thing. Maybe the Texans' desperation to win is going to, force them to have some success. Like, I think it forced them to make a trade. Maybe it forces them to, fill that fire, and that fire able to create some victories. You know, the old saying, pressure creates diamonds. Maybe that's what's going on in an RG. 713-780. It also does that too, doesn't it? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that you need to get in your life, maybe this is something because your pipes are busting too, is a home remodel. Look, we've been thinking about this for a long time. We're eventually going to bite the bullet. This is something that I'm sure all of your wives want as well. Who doesn't want to upgrade their home in some form or fashion? Pinnacle Construction is the name that you need to know, and it's peak time to do this just ahead of the summer. Just want something fresh? Are you creating a new look? Kitchen? How about the floors? How about the cabinets? Whatever the case may be. How about the bathroom? How about a room addition? You just want to slap on a room to your house. Well, you've thought about some of those things or all of those things. Of course you have. But you've been waiting for the right people. Somebody that you can trust, not charge you through the roof. Well, it's Pinnacle Construction, general contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair. You think about it, they can do it. Are you choosing a team to remodel your home? We know that can be confusing, but allow the talented team at Pinnacle Construction to ease that confusion for you. Doug Johnson's the owner of Pinnacle Construction. He's a native Houstonian. He's been here his whole life. He serves all of the greater Houston area. And Doug and his team will guarantee quality in-house work. And you know they're not going to bolt. They're not going to leave town. They're here to stay. They've been here for over two decades. They're licensed and insured with stellar customer service for every project and every customer. You can get free estimates right now with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician. You call or text 281-900-3004. That's right. Call or text 281-900-3004. You can visit them online, 975generalcontractor.com, to learn more. Also, financing options are available. And we also offer an ESPN discount. So head over to 975generalcontractor.com right now to find out more. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-3776. 0891 at the Players. The Texans have... Okay, let me try to figure out exactly what he's saying here. If the players the Texans have more end up being competitive and win games and division, who cares what they give up? All right, let me paraphrase. If the Texans players end up good, no one's going to care what they traded. Partially. I think that's partially true. I think we're always going to evaluate this trade, quite frankly. Like, yeah. I don't think this is ever going away. Like, this is always something we evaluate for better or for worse. If one player is good, if one player is bad, the evaluation of this trade is going to exist forever. Like when we look at Texans history, because it's going to be one of the biggest trades in Texans history.
Yeah, I hate to say it's a trade that's going to live in infamy, but it is. You're right.
Well, it might not if the players are good. It could be a trade that lives in the opposite of infamy, whatever that is.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it's going to be. It's just like the DeAndre Hopkins trade or the Laremy Tunsil trade. Although you're right, it could be a trade that we remember fondly because of how it changed the direction of the entire franchise. But either way, there is an indelible mark on the history of this franchise by trades, and this one gets added to the Tunsil trade and the Hopkins trade for sure because of the fact that there's so much at stake, there was so much given, and then you're waiting to find out just how much the return is going to be for what you got and how the players perform for who you acquired. So I think that there's a lot at stake here from both on both sides of the trade. But the one thing that I think everybody just has to admit is it's franchise changing either way. It can be franchise changing in the fact that you could have gotten the players right and that these guys perform at a really, really high level and that everybody's super pleased with what they got. But there's always going to be a side eye until the picks are made and then even after the picks are made as to what you gave up, who they got, you know, what Arizona does with it. Do they pick a player and just take one player and pick someone to help their team? Do they trade it away and get a haul like the Bears did last year, only this time probably with a more significant player that had people have their eye on, so maybe they're willing to give up more? Mm-hmm. Do they get a resource for Kyler Murray and get arguably the best receiver to come out in the draft in maybe a decade? But there's so many different things we're going to be looking at. So there, it's a possibility that it could go either way, but there's just so much value to be discussed and evaluated in the next year to and then 3 years to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, it's never going away. Now, the way that you feel about it's going to swing based on production. Like, if C.J. Stroud's playing at an all-pro level, if Will Anderson's playing at an all-pro level, we'll celebrate Nick Caserio and celebrate the draft day trade, which is the biggest draft day trade the Houston Texans will have made in history. If it goes the other way, it'll be the opposite. So, like, it's the pendulum. quite frankly, in the production of both players. It's not just one. It's the production of both. Because if it's Will Anderson that plays well and C.J. Stroud that produces poorly, well, you drafted C.J. Stroud over Will Anderson and then had to trade all the picks to get Will Anderson when you could have just drafted Will Anderson. If it's C.J. Stroud that plays well and Will Anderson that does not, well, it's, well, you should have just drafted C.J. Stroud and not made the trade for number three. So it's not about Stroud being better than the return. It's not about Anderson being better than the return. It's about both players being better than the return that you gave
there's up. Also, yeah, there's no doubt about it, because also as it relates to the trade, I think that we all can admit that Caserio did, knowing that he, you know, the night before he was already discussing making this move with Arizona, that the smart thing to do was to never let, you know, show your hand and take the quarterback first, because there's a larger ransom always put on a player that's as significant as a quarterback, no matter who the prospect is. So they're both roped into this. It's almost interchangeable. If you say that they made the trade for Will Anderson because that's what the report said and that's what the trade officially was, so be it. But I think in a lot of ways, the trade could be, you could say the trade was made for C.J. Stroud, because one way or another, these are the two guys that are interchangeable that are going to go. Mm-hmm. So these are the guys that are going to be evaluated the same way with the same scrutiny as it relates to, did they get enough, did they give up too much, and who won the trade?
Battery Chuck says the rest of the country won't care what they traded if they're good. The locals will care until they retire. I think that sums it up pretty good. OG on the Twitch, how is this franchise changing? They had excess capital used to make their move. They still have a first next year and most of their draft picks. Who cares? The reason that it's franchise changing could be for better or for worse. Like, it could be both. Like, it could be really good if C.J. Stroud is the best quarterback in this draft that has a really good career. If Will Anderson turns into being one of the best defensive ends in the NFL, well, then it's franchise changing in a positive way, because you acquired two really good players that you hope are the pillars of a playoff team for the next 7 years. If it goes the other way, where they're just kind of mediocre, and then all of a sudden that pick next year turns into Marvin Harrison Jr., and Marvin Harrison Jr. goes on to be one of the top five receivers in all of football on his way to Canton in the gold jacket, then that's how it changes the franchise in a negative way. So I understand that it could go either way, and the player production is what's going to make it go either way.
It's short-sighted, though, Jeremy, and narrow-minded to not look at all of the different aspects of the trade. Mm-hmm. I mean,
the probabilities of it are what it always means. Even what Nick Caserio said about, we don't care until we get there. What do you mean you don't care?
It's what, you know, if that pick turns out to be two or three first-round picks and some other sweeteners and maybe a player next year for a roster that has been, you know, desperate to try and improve and climb out of the worst roster spot, you know, in the league, then you're being narrow-minded and short-sighted to not see that that could have helped you in so many other ways as well. It, like you said, if it turns into be Marvin Harrison Jr., if C.J. Stroud's your guy, regardless of what Will Anderson does, and you know that you could have had a guy that has chemistry already with your quarterback that could have been, you know, as important as wide receivers are in the NFL, a guy that could be, you know, someone to take the franchise to the next level along with your quarterback, and you don't think that there's a reason to be concerned and value to be attached to that, then I think you're missing the point.
713-780-ESPN. 9227 says, why do y'all care so much about the future picks? Y'all have never expressed trust and certainty in the Texans do the right thing anyway. What makes you think the future picks, that he gets the future's picks right? What makes you think he gets the current picks right? I'll say that. It's just the promise of future hope. The future is now. One, I've always been pretty complimentary of Nick Caserio from a draft perspective. I think from a trade perspective, that you look at most of the trades that he has made, and he's lost almost every single one, whether it's trading late round picks for guys who don't even make the, you know, training camp roster, whether it's trade value charts, which I know that Houston's tired of hearing about trade value charts, and I'm tired of talking about trade value charts. Nick Caserio's strength is not negotiating a trade. In fact, he's lost almost every single trade he's ever made. But from selecting players, I've always been complimentary of Nick Caserio. If you go back to his first draft class that he had when he didn't have a first or a second round pick, and I know we don't think of Davis Mills much of, like right now in this city, Davis Mills started a bunch of NFL games as a third round quarterback. Go look to see how many third round quarterbacks have started a bunch of games in the NFL. Now, some of that's because of the situation, and the Houston Texans didn't really have a lot of good quarterback play, so I can understand that. But then go look at last year's draft class. I know some people knocked Derek Stingley. I think Derek Stingley is going to be a really good football player. Kenyon Green? I'm hoping. But then Jalen Petrie, really good pick in the second round. Christian Harris, really good pick to trade up and get him. Damian Pierce was a huge diamond in the rough for Nick Caserio. So actually,
we'll see.
I
John
like,
Mechie, he also could turn out very well.
That's a good point. Like, I overlooked Mechie because he hasn't played. That's right. Yeah, second rounder that I have high hopes for this year. I look at Nick Caserio as an evaluator, and look, maybe this is actually a great thing whenever you're trying to forecast what C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson are going to be as professionals. I think Nick Caserio has been good in both drafts that he's had as the Texans general manager. I like the players he got in this draft, so again, his draft prowess, I'm complimentary of. His trade prowess, I think, is the worst in the NFL.
Hey, look, I think there's another misconception out there when being hyper-defensive about your football team doing some positive things that have energized the football community here in Houston, and that is to think that either one of us think that they didn't do well in the draft. I mean, you have your own opinions. I have said over and over again, my only concern here, because I care about this franchise, is the cost that it took to get the players that you got. Because I truly believe, as much as you've said it, and I said even with what he had to work with when he first took over the team and he didn't have a first or second round pick, I think he got some football players. And I think last year when he had a full complement, he did get some football players, as you just highlighted. And I think this year he did that again. And what I said going into the draft was, I want you to fill holes. Holes that you didn't fill in free agency that really could be significant if you don't do something to address them. And he did that too. I think that his ability to evaluate talent and his ability to draft right now is something that I believe in. I believe that he's done a good job this last season, and I like the players that they've brought in. So I want to make that very, very clear. But I also think that it's fair to say that when we start evaluating Nick Caserio, it's not just about evaluating players in the draft and taking the players. It's your ability or inability to make the moves necessary. Free agency moves, coaching moves, personnel moves, trades. We knew we were killing him from the start on the fact that he was just basically trading and then throwing away what he got in trades when it was sixth round picks, seventh round picks, defensive backs from other squads, that he just was swinging and missing all over the place. And we kept saying, well, we just hold out hope when it's more significant pieces that he will do a better job. But you also know with every passing move, he's going to be graded more critically, and it's going to be more, and there's going to be a more tension drawn. And now with a trade like this, at this point in his career as the Houston Texans general manager, it's fair to say that this has more impact than any other move that he's made other than the Deshaun Watson trade.
And I just didn't care about his cavalier attitude about trading the first round pick next year. Oh, we'll worry about that next year. You got to understand the probability. You got to be looking at the future as the GM. 713-780-3776. The Astros with not a lot of roster movement yet. Some roster movement. J.P. France is going to be called up to the Astros and start tomorrow's game is what we're reading. Also, Forrest Whitley no longer starting for the Space Cowboys. Could he be on his way up to the Houston Astros? What does this all mean? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So the Houston Astros reports are calling up J.P. France. There's also reports that he's going to start tomorrow's game in Seattle. So the debut of J.P. France, he was scratched from yesterday's game, not you. So yesterday he was supposed to start. So he's going to be on, he's actually a couple of extra days of rest when he starts for the Astros tomorrow. And then there was news coming out earlier today that the Astros or the Space Cowboys have scratched Forrest Whitley's. Forrest Whitley's for today's start. A lot of people are jumping to conclusions. Perhaps Forrest Whitley is also on his way up for the Houston Astros. What do you make of all of this mess?
Well, I think that there's a couple of different ways. When I first heard the news and saw what you saw, the first thing I thought was, well, both the guys that are on the IL are going to be there for a while, and they're probably more significant than they want to lead on to. And even in the case of Urquidy, we already basically were told without being told he's going to be on the IL for a while. They're going to make sure that he's right. And shut him down for a while. So what it told me was that they need two starters to kind of fill in this important section of the early portion of the year, and that France was the first solution that everybody knew. Whitley is the other guy, as much as Belak did it the other night, and there was talk of Belak also being a guy that still possibly could be worked in. I think that the time has now finally come that the guy that has been, you know, more talked about than just about any pitching prospect for the Astros, maybe in 2 decades, is a guy that's going to get his time in the major leagues. I think the first thing it said to me was he's pitching very soon for the Astros, and they need to see what he has. And it's kind of similar to what we had with the conversation of Dana Brown needs to explore both interior and exterior options, and everything should be on the table as to how they solve this short-term problem and how the long-term effects of it, you know, are residual with the two pitchers. I think you're going to see Whitley pitch very quickly in the big leagues for the Astros as well, and I'm excited to see what he's got because I'm tired of getting people that gets hooked on social media videos of his stuff. I need to see if he's capable of getting major league hitters out.
I don't think this means Forrest Whitley's coming up, to be honest with
Why?
You. Because he's got a 6 ERA in Sugarland.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's got a plus-plus fastball, and you know that, you know, they, I mean, everybody's sick of hearing about him, and then all the setbacks and the things that have happened along the way that have given people cause for pause. I think that they want to see what they got. They want to see if he's capable of doing this, and regardless of what his ERA says, and regardless of the circumstances around it, I think that they're also in a pinch, and I think that if they don't believe that Belak is a guy that they can truly count on for multiple starts in this period of time when they're trying to figure it out, I think they're going to see who else can.
But they already called up Belak and not Whitley. So I don't think that they're telling you that they trust Whitley.
Well, then why
would
they shut him down?
Forrest?
Yeah.
I'm scared. Maybe it's something else. Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Like, okay. I don't understand the plan of calling Forrest Whitley up. Like, you already made the decision that Belak's coming up before Whitley. You already leaked out that J.P. France is going to get called up and make a start tomorrow. Like, what's the move? Like, you're going to send – who are you sending down? Because tomorrow, whenever they make the move official that, you know, J.P. France is now being added to the active roster, well, who are you sending down? It's probably either Ronel Blanco or Matt Gage. It's one of those two.
I was going to say Gage because they used him.
Right.
And at the time, they had indicated he might be sent down before the road trip.
So one of those guys is going down. So if you're adding Forrest Whitley, then the other guy's going down. They're suddenly going to flip the script on Ronel Blanco that we think Ronel Blanco should go back to Sugarland and he should be pitching. And we're going to bring up Forrest Whitley, who has an ERA of 6. I really don't see the logic there.
Well, but you know that you've seen what I've seen, which is Blanco, for as much as Dana Brown was enamored with his stuff in spring training and wanted to stretch him out, he struggled since he's been on the active roster this year. Maybe also the fact that they want to get him down there and get a couple of starts so that he can start getting more stretched out than he maybe already is, and at the same time, see what you got, because it's all hands on deck, and see, you know, who's capable of stepping up for the short term to help out.
Blanco's been better in the majors than Forrest Whitley's been at AAA.
I know what you're saying.
Like, I don't understand. I don't get the play. I really don't get the play of Forrest Whitley being added to this roster right now. Like, I really don't.
I just think that they think that he has the stuff. And obviously, you know, again, because of when they drafted him, what they thought he had, and then whatever has happened since then, I believe there's still a belief that they want to see what they've got, so that they truly know what Dana Brown is dealing with, because he came in well after all of the Forrest Whitley hype and then the downfall. And I think they want to see it. And I think that regardless of whoever he played against and whatever the circumstance was and how he got touched up in Sugarland, I think they're probably going to give him a start or two to see what he can do.
I don't think there's any way they're giving him a start.
Okay.
I think there's a minor chance that they're adding him to this pitching staff. They're not giving him a start over Brandon Belak. They called it Brandon Belak first. They're not giving him a start over J.P. France. They've already announced
that
but reports are saying that J.P. France is going to start tomorrow's game. I don't think they're going to a 6-man rotation. I don't think there's any chance that Forrest Whitley starting a game with the current 5 that you already have, at least in the next like couple of weeks. And I really don't see the plan of adding him to the big league team at all right now.
So do you think that we're misreading this then?
Yeah, I do.
And that this is another injury?
Or maybe it's not serious, but yeah, I do. Like, why are they calling up Forrest Whitley? What's the plan?
I think it's stuff, what you see with the stuff in your eyeballs.
Don't they like Ronel Blanco's stuff? And Ronel Blanco's been better in the majors than Forrest Whitley's been in AAA.
Yeah, but like if they believe that he has, if they see it and it's like, okay, well, we put him with Maldi, we put him around Josh Miller, like, you know, maybe like we can help develop him more up here. Like, he's got big league stuff. Like, the numbers might not say it right now, but like he's got what he needs to succeed. So like there could be a path. I mean, my biggest concern is that like this. I think for sure Luis Garcia's injury news is bad, and maybe they're not letting on how serious Urquidy is,
or how much time they're going to sit him.
Yeah.
I don't think it really has much to do with Urquidy. I think
More
it has.
Garcia.
Yeah, I don't know if Urquidy really factors into play here, because like they've already announced Urquidy's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. So, like, that is already what it is. Like, I mean, sunk cost at this point.
And with the Bielak stuff, like, Bielak could be sent down. Like, it could be, you know, they could like Matt Gage. And, like, Bielak, I know it seems like he's a factor, but maybe they don't think he is.
And now Forrest Whitley's part of your five-man rotation, and Brandon Bielak is not.
Or J.P. Francis, and then...
Well, J.P. Francis is starting tomorrow.
I think J.P. Francis, unless he completely craps the bed, he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, so
I think he's going to be your first fill-in starter that they're going to give a really good look to. But I really believe that. I go back to what I said about Dana Bright, and I hope you're wrong, just simply because I hope Forrest Whitley doesn't have another setback.
I hope I'm wrong, too.
Yeah, but I'm just saying... When I said Dana Brown right now is the time to explore all your options, he's an option. He might not be your best option. Your point about his ERA may lead a lot of people to believe, or some people to believe, that he doesn't deserve the chance. But we know what, to Joe's point, his stuff has been, what people have seen, the reason why he was taken where he was taken. And I think Dana Brown, who doesn't know that much about him compared to the rest of us, would probably like to see what he can do and with the people and the resources at the major league level, see if he's capable of doing something.
I also wouldn't bring him up, Forrest Whitley, to like make his major league baseball debut when he hasn't been pitching well. Like, he's been in bad form. There's no urgency to bring up Forrest Whitley. Like, is he a marketable, like, is he, like, I don't, that's the wrong word. Is he substantially better than Brandon Bielak at getting hitters out in the big league level? I think the numbers would tell you no. How about J.P. France? I think the numbers would tell you no. Renell Blanco, I know, has been getting hit around a little bit. 4.5 ERA in the bigs is better than a 6 ERA in Sugarland. So I do think that the Forrest Whitley not making tonight's start for Sugarland, I do think people are jumping to some conclusions that maybe aren't true. I don't see them sending down Blanco for Forrest Whitley. And J.P. France is taking somebody's roster spot tomorrow. J.P. France is taking the roster spot of Gage, or he's taking the roster spot of Blanco. You're assuming it's Gage. I probably agree with you. If it's not, like, so now, if Forrest Whitley's coming up, whose roster spot is he taking? He's taking Renell Blanco's? He's taking Brandon Bielak? I just don't see that. I really don't. And look, I think it'd be intriguing to see Forrest Whitley. But also for, like, Forrest Whitley, like, trying to do what's right for Forrest Whitley, why are you bringing up Forrest Whitley whenever he hasn't been pitching all that well?
I think we've seen a lot of Blanco. And I think that what we've seen so far maybe gives you an indication that, not that they've seen enough, but that they want to try somebody else. Or he's been basically mop-up guy. You know, he's not being used, you know, as for as much as he came out of camp being a guy everybody was talking about. I think that Dana Brown's seen enough of him for the time being. And I think he's probably slightly intrigued why, with the overall arm strength and the stuff that Whitley possesses, whether he's being effective with it or not. And I think he wants to see what he can do.
I think it's important to note, too, that Forrest Whitley coming into today has appeared in 5 games. 3 of them have been starts. But in every single game, he's went 4 or more innings. Like, the Astros in Sugarland, they use the piggyback system. So just because Forrest Whitley is not starting today's game, there is a decent chance he's piggybacking and throwing 4 innings in relief. He's appeared in 5 and he started 3. But every outing, he's thrown 4 innings or more. I don't think Forrest Whitley's on his way to the Astros.
We'll see.
J.P. France, Forrest Whitley piggyback makes some sense, though.
Why would that make more sense than a J.P. France, Ronel Blanco piggyback?
I don't know if it makes more sense, but it makes sense. Well, but like, if they're both coming up, it's like you got to put them somewhere. You're not going to use them in only certain situations.
Okay,
have...
let's entertain that idea for a second. Forrest Whitley's piggybacking J.P. France. Who are you sending down?
Bielak.
So who's your fourth starter?
No, I guess in that situation it would be Gage and Blanco.
It'd probably be Blanco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now your only long guy, mop-up guy, would be Martinez. If
he was going to be the other name I threw out there. Like,
Dusty likes what he can do.
They kind of like, I feel like they're wishy-washy on Seth Martinez.
I think they view Seth Martinez as just a guy.
Yeah, he is who he is and who Dusty thought he would be, which is I can throw him in a mop-up situation. I can throw him in a multiple inning situation. He basically doesn't get blown up. He's not overpowering. But he can be effective, and I think Dusty trusts him. But I think it is definitely Blanco and Gage that go down. And I think that when I was going to say that you're onto something, it's because they've done it before. They've done it before when they were getting Hunter Brown ready, when they were doing the split starts too, where they were doing each guy 4+, and they were trying to get guys ready and see. And that's
in the
how
bigs?
No, it's Sugar Land.
Yeah.
In Sugar Land. So I think that there's probably something to that in terms of systematically what they're trying to do.
713-780-ESPN is Forrest Whitley on his way up to the Astros. 713-780-3776. And what's the Astros' plan? Urquidy's going to be gone for, it seems like, at least a month. Luis Garcia, I have a theory on Luis Garcia, too, by the way. But what is the Astros' plan in the rotation with no Urquidy, with no Luis Garcia? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, what is the plan for the rotation? While Jose Urquidy's gone for, who knows, 4-6 weeks. Lance McCullers is going to be gone still for a good amount of time. Luis Garcia, foreseeable future. Like, you're not going to get any of those guys back at minimum what? 4 weeks?
Yeah, minimum month.
Minimum 4 weeks?
Minimum a month.
Yeah, I think minimum a month. Best case scenario, one of those guys is back in a month. I also have a theory on Luis Garcia. Like, when did he got his MRI, was it Wednesday night? It's like
the
Wednesday?
Day after the game.
He
so
pitched Tuesday?
I think that's right.
So he went to the MRI. You know, they said that they were going to get a second opinion, and we're still waiting on the news there. I'm feeling a Friday news dump. I'm feeling a Friday's news dump when it comes to Luis Garcia. It's going to roll out somewhere between 3 and 6. Well, the Astros are on the West Coast tonight,
yeah.
So maybe it's even later. But I think tonight they're going to tell us that Luis Garcia has a torn UCL.
Speaking of, 4995 has officially been eliminated from our Lance McCullers Jr.
Oh, really?
Predictions.
Is that our first elimination?
Our first elimination. They had May 3rd.
Man, I forgot what I guessed. What did I guess, like June?
June 13th. Joel.
Is that in play?
I said June 19th, didn't I?
You said the 20th.
20th?
Because you're going to that game or something?
No, because my birthday's the 19th.
Then why'd you pick the 20th?
Did you pick the 19th and I wrote down the 20th?
Yeah, I thought I picked the 19th.
Okay, I'm going to change that for it because I feel like that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought so. Because they're playing the Mets that day, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, we said you couldn't have the 19th because Dre took the 19th. So you moved back.
Oh, okay.
What did you pick, Joe?
I'm next up to be eliminated May 17th.
You better hurry back. Yeah. you got 12 days, Lance.
12 days, Lance.
Feel like I hardly knew you, Joe.
Like, I'm going to be second cut. It's not good.
What's the over-under right now when Lance McCullers makes his season debut?
I think early June. So I would say the next, like, 25 days?
25 days?
Yeah, within the next... Like I think it's like early June, so I would set it like I guess I'll set it 30 days.
So June 13th can still be in play.
Yeah, over under 30 days.
Well, I'll go over. I'll double down on my June 13th.
Might as well.
Yeah, I'll double down on June 13th. Do you think that he'll get moved up at all because of the Urquidy Garcia stuff?
No,
he can't afford to do that. Nah. No
I hope
way.
Not.
No, I hope not. Look, it's one thing to say Urquidy had multiple issues with the same shoulder, and so therefore you handle him with a little bit more kid gloves. There ain't no more kid gloves if you're using jazz hands and Mickey Mouse hands and all kinds of gloves. There's no way in hell you rush Lance McCullers back for anything after all he's been through, period.
You know, I'm with you guys. I wouldn't touch it. 2541, Blanco is so bad, even though maybe Whitley needs to be thrown to the Wolves to activate his skills. Blanco's been better in the bigs than Forrest Whitley's been in AAA.
Yeah, but you've seen Blanco. Even though you're right in saying that, there, I don't have a whole hell of a lot of confidence when I see him in a game. I normally think that basically the game's over when I see him in a game now.
He's a mop-up guy.
Yeah.
But do you have more faith in Forrest Whitley, who's got a worse ERA getting AAA hitters out?
I might not have more faith in him. I have more interest. I have more curiosity. Sure. I really, truly, for all of the excessive browbeating we took about Forrest Whitley this and Forrest Whitley that, don't trade Forrest Whitley, and then all the crap that he brought on himself with all the other stuff, I just want to see what he can do. I want to see if he's capable. You know, maybe he shows you, you know, a couple of bright spots and then the wheels fall off. I don't know. But it's about time that we see something tangible from him so we can evaluate going forward what he could possibly be. So I'm definitely intrigued and highly interested in him as opposed to, I think for the short term or for the foreseeable future, I've seen enough of Blanco to know what he is.
I would agree with you from an excitement level. I'd be more excited to see Forrest than Blanco, but I don't think that Forrest would be better at getting outs than Blanco at the major league level right now. I was going to say something off of that, but I forgot.
Hmm.
The other thing, like the Astros executives and general managers, like, or Dana Brown, there's only one general manager. Well, maybe not with the Astros. They got Bagwell, Enos Cabell, and Reggie Jackson, too. They got more than one general manager, if we're being completely honest. They see Forrest Whitley. Like, we haven't. We haven't laid eyes on him unless you're going to Space Cowboy games, which you should, or you're listening on ESPN 92.5, which you should. But those dudes see him. They monitor everything. That's their job. They're watching every single Forrest Whitley pitch that he throws. So, like, while we haven't seen him, our listeners probably haven't seen him for the most part, the Astros certainly have.
Sure, but I think that, you know, when they saw him in spring training, they probably got an indication of either a wow factor or something that they wanted to check on, or, you know, maybe they started shaking their heads going, I don't know why this guy's in our system, one way or the other. But I think that regardless of his earned run average, I think that's probably why you may see him. It's because somebody saw something when he was there in spring training and people were keeping a close eye on him and he was working with the law firm, that maybe there's an indication that, hey, they didn't foresee an opportunity like this coming up because they didn't expect to have any injuries to their rotation, let alone three of them. But at the same time, once you have three of them, now you've got to go a little bit more expansive in terms of what you're willing to consider and what you may do. And he factors right in being a AAA starting pitcher that has came in with a lot of hype.
That eye test, though, didn't end in spring training. Like, the eye test has continued to every single one of his outings this year.
But, and I know this isn't going to be, it's not going to sit well with you, and it's probably more of a shot in the dark than anything else. But I would also say that in the AAA level, the defense that's playing behind him sometimes isn't nearly what he's going to have playing behind him in the major leagues. I don't know and can't explain. It didn't go start for start to see why his ERA is in the sixes, which isn't good. But I do know that he's got a plus-plus fastball. I do know that people have said in the past that his stuff is definitely major league stuff. I think if you're a new general manager with a new franchise and you see a guy that has an arm like that when you have issues with starting pitching, I'd be intrigued enough to see what he could do.
Defense can't defend walks, hit batters, and home runs. And Whitley's got a bunch of those.
Okay. That's like I said. I knew you weren't going to just go, okay, you're right, when I said it. So, yeah.
I do that all the time.
I know.
3780, what happens first? McCullers makes a start or Abreu hits three home runs?
Three home
so
runs?
So we're saying McCullers is back in 4 weeks. Joe is tend to be a little bit more optimistic than us, as you can tell by our guess the date.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers, let's say it's 6 weeks.
He doesn't even have one.
Let's
right.
say it's June 18th. Or June, we'll go with Blanker's birthday. June 19th, Lance McCullers makes his return. Does Jose Abreu have three home runs by June 19th?
No. That's pretty easy for me.
I think this might be a blowout.
Yeah, this is an easy hard no.
I mean, he's making harder contact, and like I think we're
so
all
so harder contact gets 10 feet from the warning track.
I think we're all hoping that like it's Jose Abreu, but
I don't even need home runs at this point. Just get a couple knocks.
I think the answer is McCullers.
Just get a couple knocks, Abreu.
Right now, he's putting all his eggs in the RBI basket.
Yeah,
at least he's got some of those.
Give me a couple knocks. Honestly, I don't need the home runs.
I'll take the Moneyball approach. Just get on base.
Yeah, that's one thing that's like bizarre about him is that like last year he was like a really in all his entire career, like the dude was a good plate appearance.
Yeah, his like, swing and miss, yeah. He's chasing in a way that like
he's pressing hard.
Yeah. I think it's more pressing. Like yep. he would draw walks last year. He would spit on pitches out of the zone. Yep. He didn't strike out a whole lot.
Because it's like we talked about with Bregman. Like you know, Bregman's obviously not the player he was in 18 and 19. Like, he's got one of the best eyes in the game.
Yeah,
like,
he's still really good at getting on base.
So, like, he can still, like, you know, like, even if he's not if he's not swinging the bat well, like, he's going to take the right pitches and, like, he's going to get some walks and, like, not be a total dud in your lineup. And Abreu is just, he's a dud.
Abreu did hit three home runs in May last year, though. He had three home runs in May.
He also hit a lot better than he did.
No, I'm not sure
in
anymore.
April, even though April wasn't good, it's been pretty bad.
He was pretty good in May last year. He was really good in June and July. Like the summer months, once the weather got hot, he was good. That's what we need. We need the weather to get hot. Is it called a hot front? It's not a hot front. It's not a warm front.
I don't know.
A heat wave. We need a heat wave to come through Houston, and Jose Abreu will be right again.
I think I have to put you back on Bad Take Boulevard because you literally yesterday we Bad Take Boulevarded. That's not a word.
it is now. He made the list.
The energy companies for saying they're not going to have enough power for us.
Yeah, now I'm talking on both sides of my mouth.
Yeah, you got to pick a side.
I want a heat wave for Abreu. I don't want a heat wave so I don't have power at my house for Branham baby.
You got to pick a side here.
Care for more, Jose Abreu or my baby?
Like, hey, so every time now Abreu has a game where he does at least something decent, just like we have music for the pitchers, we got to play the old school song Heat Wave. one of the two Heatwave songs every time Abreu does something, so we can hold out for hope that we can break that streak too.
We need a little Heatwave for Jose Abreu, not so much for Branham, baby. Yeah, maybe we do need to play that song, get him going again. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Astros are in Seattle tonight for the first of a three-game series. Major League Baseball, MLB.com, put together a list of the best rivalries in baseball. Are the Mariners the Astros' best rival? And also, we got to play the game. It's the opener of a series. Is this guy a Mariner, or is he a footballer in La Liga?
Me on that again.
We'll see. The jury's still out. Is he a Mariner, or is he a footballer in La Liga? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.